for my ally is the Force. And the powerful ally it is, life creates it, makes it grow. Its energy surrounds us and binds us. Luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. You must feel the Force around you. Here, between you, me, the tree, the rock, everywhere.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
Bad feeling about this.
Welcome to episode 332 of Blue Harvest. I'm your host, Halls Burkhart.
And I'm your host, Will Whitten.
Hey, he's here from the beginning. Fucking stoked, buddy.
Needed early tonight.
And we're continuing our run of special guests discussing the Book of Boba Fett. This week we have a good friend who you've heard on the podcast before. It's our buddy Josh Chapman from the Star Wars Spelt Out podcast.
Hey guys, good to see you. Welcome. So good to chat again. I know we kind of chatted briefly, Hawes, when... Steele called you up at the live Steele Wars event he did in Melbourne a week or two ago and just awkwardly held the phone up while we were yelling, hey, Hawes, how's it going? Which I'm sure was very confusing for you at 2 a.m. or whatever it was as well. But, technically we have spoken.
Yeah.
A little bit.
So we're going to be talking about Chapter 3 of the Book of Boba Fett today. But before we get into that, Josh, buddy, how have you felt about the first couple? We haven't gotten to hear from you. I mean, obviously anybody that's listened to your podcast has heard, as they should, but refresh us. What you think about the series so far leading up to episode 3?
I'm enjoying it. I'm having a good time. I'm having more of a fun time than I probably thought I would be. And I think fun is the word. This is a fun-ass show. And it's sort of, I don't know whether I was expecting it to be as fun as it was. I'm quite happy to go along with the ride and things. And there's been some cool surprises and some cool creatures and stuff that I wouldn't have expected to see. It's, some of it's played out kind of like, oh yeah, I thought that was going to happen. But it's been cool. Like it's just got this sort of fun tone to it, you know, even in the bits, which I think has led a little bit unevenness in places, but like it's really embracing the Star Wars-iness, I think, which is cool. And which also means that I'm not really quite sure where they're going to go, which is great.
Yeah, I know. We're 3 episodes in and it's still sort of got me guessing. Every time, well, you know, there is some stuff that I sort of see coming, like you mentioned. But then every time I think I sort of have it all in line in my head and figured out, it kind of takes a left turn and takes me by surprise. So this week's episode is called The Streets of Mos Espa. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Another one directed by Robert Rodriguez. I think we know that I remember reading a list of directors, and I think Bryce Dallas Howard is up again, is up at some point, and maybe Dave Filoni.
Mm-hmm. And I heard Filoni. I didn't hear BDH, but
yeah. Cool. And I would imagine that Robert Rodriguez is going to handle at least one more of the remaining 4 episodes.
Probably the finale. You know, if you put money on it, you'd say the finale, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
I would think so.
Yeah, and then I was reading something this week that apparently Dave Filoni wrote episode 6 of the series, and everything else was written by Jon Favreau. So, you know, I think that has led people to think that maybe Dave Filoni is also directing the sixth episode, which would make sense. And also everybody is sort of memeing on it, being like, well, I guess we know what episode the Clone Wars characters are showing up in.
Captain Rex is just going to come up being carried on a little, on a litter with a bunch of, you know, other clones turning up. And yeah, I don't know. Like it's, is that a step too far to have a Captain Rex meet a Boba Fett? Like, is that too, is that just going to confuse too many people? Is it like, the, you know, with the old split screen, you know, Tamara's got the fake gray beard pasted on kind of thing. Is that just, is that a step too far?
I don't know. I want it. And I don't, I mean, I would love Boba to meet a clone in this show just because I think there is some interesting stuff they could do with the story there. Regardless, I think it's almost impossible for Tamora not to show up as Rex at some point. If it's not in this show, then I think at the very latest, we'd probably see him in Ahsoka, right? Like, that would make a lot of sense.
You know what you do when you, you bring the clone in? That you do, you do the Boba Fett fake out death then, don't you?
What do you mean? Yeah,
if you've got a guy, if they introduce a clone in Filoni's episode, whether it's Rex or another one of them, and you could kill off, in inverted commas, Boba Fett, think he's died or something's happened, and then it turns out it's a clone fake out because it's a bloke who looks just like him.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, the thing is, I just don't, I mean, obviously we're only three episodes in. I just don't see where Rex would necessarily fit in the Book of Boba at this point. But anything's possible. So, Will, what did you think about Chapter 3?
I thought it was really cool, especially his ability to add to his personal mercenary bounty army. I love the addition of the cyborg biker gang.
Right.
I like the look of their bikes, you know, the 1950s kind of, I don't know, roadster. I felt like the speeder that the mayor's assistant was in was almost the same damn speeder from Han Solo, from Solo.
Oh, you mean from the beginning?
from
the chase towards the beginning? It might have been a repainted version of that speeder. I haven't compared the two enough.
It may not be identical, but they're damn similar.
Yeah.
What else? I feel like it's a very cool example of him solidifying power.
Right, right. Slowly but surely finding his way, right? Like, because he's...
Right.
He's definitely not without fault and, like, not, you know, he's still figuring it out, is guess what I'm trying to say. Josh, what did you think overall before we, you know, get into the nitty-gritty of it?
Well, I mean, it's great to be on an episode, you know, this year with you guys where everybody just loved it and there was nothing, no controversy and everything. It was just awesome. But, no, I thought it was cool. It was fun. Again, it was just that sort of, I thought tonally it was a little bit all over the shop because it dealt with some really heavy stuff, which I felt probably needed more attention. And then there was some of the lighter wackadoo stuff as well, so that I thought tonally it was a little bit all over the shop. But you know, again, I thought it was cool. It opened the world up again. We got to see more creatures. We got to see, you know, the plot sort of moved along a little bit. We got a bit more idea about the motivation. We were sort of messaging during the week, pause, you know, about what we had some fears about some stuff, which was pretty substantiated, I think. But again, it's another left turn. Like, it's sort of, every time you sort of think you know where it's going, it does sort of deviate, and not just the story, like just the tone and the pace and what Boba Fett is about really as well, is sort of changing too, because it's just offering up more questions and things. So I'm glad we're getting kind of seven episodes.
Yeah,
seven or eight, seven. Yeah, I'm glad that we it's a longer sort of thing. You know, if there'd been four or five, I think we'd probably be left hanging. So
yeah,
overall, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's my favorite character, so I would have taken 10 episodes. Seven was kind of a surprise, I think, mainly just because the previous two seasons of The Mandalorian had been eight. But, you know, for whatever reason, they decided to go with seven, whether that was a budget issue or the story they wanted to tell was just seven episodes, whatever it may be. I really like this episode quite a bit. I would say last week's I still probably liked a little better, I only have the slightest complaint about this episode, and that's that I felt like the speeder chase was a little slow and janky feeling at points. Like, visually it was really cool. I like the bikes, I like the kids, I like, you know, the mayor's major domo or whatever, his speeder. I think that was cool. It was like this weird, Jesse actually pointed it out and kind of nailed what it felt like when I rewatched it with her the next day. But it kind of felt like a cartoon chase sequence, to where, like, you even had them breaking through a painting, like a pane of glass, like they would.
Oh, Jabba the Hutt.
It was a classic 80s kind of, almost like we've got to shoot it like an 80s thing where we don't have the, you know, the digital stuff to cut the corners and stuff. We've got to kind of do it in camera.
Yeah.
It was funny because I watched it Wednesday night here, you know, when it sort of dropped in Australia about 7 p.m. And I really noticed it, you know, and I really went, well, this feels like it's running in slow motion and stuff. But then I actually watched it about half an hour ago before, just to freshen myself, because I knew I was talking to you guys. And the pace felt better on the second time around. So I don't know whether it was just I was expecting it to be really slow because I've been reading all some of the discourse and stuff. But then, you know, obviously, like, that gang are mods. So I don't know if you guys know what a mod is. It was basically a counterculture in the 60s Britain, right? You know, the Who, Quadrophilia, Brighton Rock. It was these, you know, people on their Vespas. It was all the look, the mirrors. Like, they are mods, you know. Like, you can take a little bit of here, you can take a little bit of there, but, you know, literally, if you've ever ridden a Vespa, if you ride a Vespa, they kind of, you know, you're not pulling on some sort of like motorbike that some of those bad motorvaders boys used to own. They were talking about, you know, how they get rid of them because they're going to break their necks and stuff. Like, they kind of zip around, that, you know, they kind of putter around. And I think because you're in this sort of condensed area, you know, you're kind of in the streets and tight corners and stuff. I think a lot to do with, like, last week, like you said, Hawes, like the train fight was so fast and paced and, you know, snappy, and it just rushed by, and, you know, and you really felt like you're on that train, and then you kind of, you know, you're in this sort of thing running at half speed. I think the juxtaposition, I think, is the most jarring part of it. I think Star Wars, we always feel like faster, more intense, everything's getting faster and more intense, rather than, like, not quite as fast and a little bit less intense.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, visually, I thought it looked really cool. I really like those speeders. I like that it's pretty obvious to me, at least, that those were actual sort of vehicles that they probably, like, CG'd out the wheels on and stuff, you know? Well, obviously, with the exception of a couple shots, like when they're jumping in the air and stuff. But I thought that was really cool.
I love the way he told the water monger, you know, to shove off.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. So that's sort of how it all kicks off, right? Is Boba gets, has a meeting with one of his constituents or whatever. Like, oh, I fucked that one up. But it's
Milton.
Yeah. It's Milton, Stephen Root. And he's a water monger.
I believe you have stolen my water.
Yeah. I always remember News down. Radio. I always loved News Radio. That's what I always remember him from.
And he's showing up because he's mad this gang has stolen his water. And he's not a moisture farmer or vapor farmer. He buys the water from those guys and then sells it, right?
And then chalks up the price.
Yeah, he's the middleman.
Yeah. So, you know, they're sort of, before that, they're sort of discussing, like, what all businesses Jabba was in control of and all this. And so Boba goes to investigate, and there's a real cool shot of Mos Espa from above at night that I really enjoyed. Like, just one of those tiny little detail things I thought was really cool. And Boba shows up, and, like, Josh, you kind of nailed it when you were talking about it earlier, that some of the tone of this show is a little unexpected to me, and that it's kind of wacky at points. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, I enjoy it. Like, I kind of like when Star Wars gets weird, and this show has gotten
comic-y.
Yeah.
You know, like, the comic book edge.
Well, he shows up, like, Boba Fett shows up, and he's like, oh, you know, where'd you get the water from? And they're like, oh, we stole it. And he goes, that's a crime. And immediately I just went, That's Casey Jones in the OG Ninja Turtle. You know, he's in the park like, you know, that's a crime. 2 minutes, you know, I can't remember the line now, but I was like, oh, he's just Casey Jones at it. He's going to pull out his hockey stick and give those kids a good whacking. Can I tell you my theory about the biker gang here?
Absolutely.
All right. So you got a bunch of young kids, impressionable kids, obviously influenced by, you know, counterculture, rock music. What was the rock band that played at Mos Espa not that long ago in that Star Wars Visions that united a
Star Waver?
Star Waver. I think they're kids who saw the Star Waver concert and have just been like, we're getting down with the rock and roll lifestyle. And who saw that Star Waver concert? Boba Fett. He's just like, that's why I'm down with these kids. They've got their Star Waver badges and stuff on their, you know, on their vests and things. They're just like, oh, you're down with the Waver. Yeah. All right. Man. We can roll with you.
If they had put a Star Waver back patch on the lady's vest, on the back of her vest.
And Boba Fett was like, I saw that bad.
I saw that bad. Like, how many songs do you know? He just straight away, he's just like that jerk guy. He's like, well, how many songs do you know, eh?
Name five songs, huh?
Yeah. I've got it on vinyl. Turbo.
And I oh, buddy. Be ready for the voicemail section later. anyways, I really like him talking to the kids, and they're like, look, well, for one, I did think it was a little lame that Boba was like, you should be working. I was like, oh, come on, man.
Come on, old man.
Don't be doing the you should be working thing. And then, like, you know, they're like, hey, there is no work. Look around. And then he offers them the job, which I really like. But my favorite part is when Steven Root comes back out, the watermonger, and starts hassling him. He's like, they owe me 1,300 credits. And Boba's like, how about 500? And like
500.
That, yeah, that little.
That's a lot for water. How many credits did Chewie sell for? 35,000 or something?
Something like that, right?
So he's asking for, you know, 1,300 for some water. Like, no wonder they're mad.
Yeah. Oh, it's clear. I mean, like, even like before he leaves, Boba tells him to lower his prices.
Yeah. He doesn't even give him half, and he tells him to lower his price.
But
those kids don't look like they're really struggling. I mean, they've got all the shiny augmentations going on. Their bikes are very shiny. I think they're just using that water to clean their bikes. I think they're just, you know, they're just rich kids out breaking windows. Like, rebels, I don't think they're really. I think that I don't think they're really slumming it. Those bikes are very shiny for a bunch of kids who are doing it pretty tough.
Young and angsty and got bionic brass knuckles, and I don't know how to use them.
Maybe it's like the equivalent. Those speeder bikes are like the equivalent of like the Kia Rio of speeder bikes in the Star Wars universe. You know what I mean?
Kia Rio.
They all got them for their sweet 16 or something. You know, yeah, like the girl just, you know,
cooler with wheels.
But yeah, then Boba has his new group. Like, I do think it's interesting, like, right, when you go and watch Return of the Jedi and you see Jabba's palace, it's so full of people and there's music and all kinds of shady folks hanging around. And now with Boba, it's kind of just him, Finnick, and a couple of Gamorreans hanging out. You know what I mean?
I gotta admit, I like it that way, though, because it's filling up, because now you got the squad in there.
Yep.
A little biker squad gang in there. There's probably going to be some other folks hanging out in there.
Oh, yeah.
You're probably going to watch it fill up.
Yeah.
It's ambience, though. It's like,
now he's got his damn rancor. You're talking about cheese? Like, not cheese, but like, you know, like comic book flashy edginess. Man got his own private trained rancor, you know, specifically adapted to him, that he states he's gonna ride in the very beginning.
Buddy, I have so much to say about that when we get to it.
No,
do not apologize. I have to hold it in, because when we get to it, I have a lot to say, because I fucking loved it. And then so Boba goes home, he's got his new group, he jumps in his flashback juice, and we get the unfortunate thing that I said, you know, last week. I was saying there's probably really only two ways that this goes. There was one I wanted and one I felt like was more likely. And unfortunately, the more likely of the dude did come true. And it is a bummer. And I would like to point out that the music in the scene when Boba is having like the bonfire funeral for all the Tuskens and all that is incredible. It's so good.
They did those guys. I did not see that coming. Like it makes sense now, but like it's a really potent loss, but man, that was dreadful.
It was, and I do agree. They could have spent some more time on that part.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see them get killed or anything. I don't know. It was just, yeah, he was kind of just left. And as soon as he left, I'm like, oh, this doesn't bode well. I mean, it was nice he went back into Mos Eisley, and you can sort of see the start of the revolution happening there. Like, I kind of were wondering, like does he even know that the Empire's gone? Like, he's his first sort of taste of civilization. I guess he's looking going home.
I didn't think about that.
Stuff's been going down since I've been gone.
Yeah.
Like, I've been in the pit, and I've been in the camp. And, I've lost my, you know, not my employer, but, you know, good for a few bucks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even consider that. He probably doesn't know. So him showing up in Mos Eisley and seeing them put those Stormtrooper helmets on the spikes was probably a bit of a surprise, I would guess.
Hmm.
Look, I'm pretty sure it was the Pikes who hired the Sand Raiders or whatever they call them to kill the Tuskens. So,
yeah, I thought it might even just be they just did that to make him think that it was them, that it was just, you know, they're just framing them. They're just going, oh, well, we'll solve two birds with one stone here. We'll go and we'll take care of it ourselves. Because it was really like decimated. Like, you know, they had some decent warriors, the Tuskens. It sort of feels like that it might have even been like attack from above or something sort of thing. It was just, it looked like they'd been cleaned out pretty harshly. But it was just, I just would have wanted, like, I don't know. It's hard to say. Do you really want more death and destruction? But at the same time, and it had plenty of weight to it, but I don't know. It kind of, I guess we spent so much time with them previously. It just felt weird that we kind of got that and then we went back.
Yeah. And it's weird because last episode, you know, was so flashback centric, and then this episode is so present day centric. Although I do feel like it does make a little bit of sense for that flashback to be in this episode, because I think it does establish more of a like rivalry with the Pikes instead of just like, oh, I'm trying to start this empire and they're moving in on what I want to run, right? Like, it adds a layer to that. So
yeah, I think the motivation was always something that I wasn't quite sure of, especially when the show started. I'm like, why does he want to be the big crime boss? It just seemed like, why did he want to do that now? Especially, you know, as we go through this and realize he doesn't really have a huge idea of how things run particularly. It was more about sort of getting at the top to achieve his means. And it seems revenge driven now, at least partially.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, he's rudely wakened by our buddy Chrysanthan, I think that's it, ripping him out of the back to tank. And then there is a brutal fight between Boba and a giant Wookiee. What'd you think about that part, Will?
Oh, man, are you kidding me? This giant Wookiee, that was a sick fight. And he's got, like, taser spike knuckles. He took one of those to the face.
Yeah.
That, I mean, Boba Fett's fighting for his life.
Yeah,
and he's under. They sliced him up pretty good too. He took what would be fatal blows for a normal man.
Yeah,
and I don't assume he got healed either. He just got thrown in the dungeon. I thought he was going to keep him down there. I thought that was going to be cool. I was like, oh, he's going to feed that Wookiee the scraps from that feast.
Well, him
put in a trough
instead of having an angry Rancor. You have an angry Wookiee down there.
Yeah.
Tried to kill me.
The fight, like, it was Viggo the only thing missing.
Eastern Promises.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It was like Eastern Promises without the dick. Like, it is, that's the first thing I thought of during this fight with Boba and his underpants. I was like, you know what? Boba Fett's underpants aren't that much different than mine. We're really not all that different, me and Boba Fett.
Military boxer briefs.
Yeah. And then, you know, the kids come in and get involved and sort of save Boba, which I like. And then there's that brutal part where Chrysantin, oh boy, I'm going to have a hard time with that one, tackles the two Gamorreans down the stairs, and then he takes a giant bite of one like it's a turkey leg at Disneyland.
Gets a pork on your fork,
Oh, brutal.
And Boba, in his compassion, tells him to put him in the Bacta tank immediately.
I love that. That he is, that is not something Jabba would have done.
Hell no.
No, sir.
The Gamorrean would have bled out on the floor.
Have we got any sort of more insight about why he's in that tank all that time? Is it Sarlacc poisoning? Is that sort of what, I mean, that's kind of what I figure. But then it's sort of, he hasn't, like, he's been in the desert all that time. Time passes. And he doesn't, well, he kind of looks like crap, but he doesn't sort of seem to be affecting him physically. But is it just a cumulative thing of, are we, 5 years of Sarlacc poisoning that's kind of weakened him?
I don't know.
Maybe it's a vanity project.
It could be.
He's going to keep going until
he starts regrowing his hair. And it's like, years come off. You know, I want my hair back.
I think there is something going on, and maybe it's just like that's how many Bacta treatments it takes to heal up all that Sarlacc damage, I guess I'm assuming we'll find out at some point. Obviously narratively it serves the purpose of every time he gets in that thing we get a sweet little flashback, but
I can imagine having your body covered in acid burns is a lot of scar tissue. It makes it hard to get around, move around, to navigate, to do things physical. Mm-hmm. If your body's covered in burns, and then all that time in the sun and in the desert, no bathing, no hygiene, just roasting in your own juices like a Darth Vader suit.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I do think there is something going on, and I just kind of assume they'll explain it. Will, I have to ask you, buddy. There's been one part. We always, how many times we've gotten voicemails that were like, Will, if you were in the Star Wars universe, what would you cook? If you had to make dinner for George Lucas, what would you make? What did you think of Boba and Fennec's breakfast spread the next day?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was awesome.
That's a lot of food for two people.
I was super impressed. I think maybe, I don't know, was it the droids making the food?
I guess so.
They must have just been used to like feeding Jabba, right?
So I guess
that's what the droids know how to do, is make all that different, awesome feast food.
Is it the nicest looking meal in Star Wars?
I'm trying to think.
I kind of think of one that looked better.
I always think
it is quite spread.
I always think the food, the scene where they're eating at Maz's castle doesn't look too bad, but that's literally just them taking like
some
different snacks and stuff.
Different weird real world
space pretzels.
Yeah. But probably
Choco sticks that Luke eats, and then you got stew that Yoda cooks.
Yep. And that's then, I mean, we never really get an idea of what was going to be served at that dinner on Cloud City. I don't even know that they got to like appetizers.
Was the table set?
It was, but I don't think there was food on the table as far as
that's fucked up. That Anakin Skywalker went to the link to set the table.
Yeah.
He's not going to eat with you or use it. But I'm going to sit at the table and let you walk in here and then snatch you up.
Yeah, they close that door and it's just like, all right, well, we already caught, we might as well eat. And he's like, eat? No. You're just going to go straight to carbonite for you, mate, on an empty stomach.
No. You're going for a diet of pain chamber. Yeah. That's where you're going.
And so then Boba hears that the twins are there and they've got a gift for him. He goes out. We get to see the cool fucking huts again. And they basically say, like, hey, man.
We're out.
We're out. Sorry. We were both lied to. There's another syndicate.
I don't believe necessarily.
Tatooine's a shithole as well.
And then who shows up with a Rancor but Danny fucking Trejo? And I was so stoked.
John Favreau's like, hey, you want to be a Star Wars Beastmaster?
you don't need a Rancor. You could just put Machete down there and like nobody would fuck with you. Just leave Danny Trejo down there. He'll take care of business. He'd drop anybody down that pit.
I think there was a lot of people who thought that if there was going to be a Rancor in the pit, like if he got a new Rancor, it might be Mochi, whatever the Rancor was from Bad Batch. I don't think this is necessarily the same Rancor. But it is interesting that we've had, two Star Wars series, in a calendar year, basically, within 12 months, and there's been sort of new Rancors introduced.
Makes you wonder how long that poor guy's been blindfolded.
Yeah, right? What did you think about all the Rancor stuff, Josh? Like, from, the twins into the scene in the Rancor pit with Danny Trejo and Boba.
Just the best looking Rancor we've seen, bar none. I mean, I know that's unfair to compare it to a, 1983 puppet, that's gotten marginally better in the special editions, because they've painted out those matte lines and done the color correction and stuff like that. But it looked amazing, and it's just weird when, they talk about like a show like this and Star Wars in general, nostalgia triggers and things like, as soon as I saw that Rancor, I was just like, oh, I love Rancors.
Yeah.
I'm great at Rancors. It was just cool. Like, I like the Hutts coming in and they're just like, stuff this planet. We didn't really want it anyway. You can have it. We're getting out. You should get out too. Something's going on. It's sort of pointing toward the Pikes, but I feel like when I have my cousin Eli on, he's been doing the recaps with me in the My Show. He was sort of talking Crimson Dawn stuff as well. And, does that, is there someone behind the scenes, further up kind of thing? I mean, who knows? I did like that. There was that really weird little bit where they drag Black Chrysanthemum out and, they're like, oh, you can have him back. And they're going, oh, we don't really want him. You can sell him to gladiators, whatever. And Boba's like, oh, just let him go. And then he does this weird little jog off to the side.
Yeah, his little jog, like he looks at Boba like, are you fucking serious? All right, I'm out, dude.
I'm not even going to walk away. I'm just going to like hightail it out of here.
I was talking to our buddy Chris Fresh right after the show aired, and I didn't even think about it, but he brought up the fact that, all these people that Boba helps end up being pretty loyal to him, right? You've got Fennec, right. You've got the Gamorreans, you've got now these kids. I kind of feel like Chrysanthemum is going to be on Team Boba before the end of this series.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, he may not come back in the next episode, but he'll come back down the road.
I think so too.
He'll join the crew eventually. That character is too cool and too badass.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen
the end of him. He was a beast.
Yeah.
Do we know who's in the suit?
I saw something. I wish I could remember the actor's name. I actually saw an interview with Temuera Morrison and Ming-Na Wen before this week's episode where they pronounced his name for the first time, and I was like, oh, got it. Well, if they don't say it in the show, then I definitely sort of have a pronunciation to go off of. A lot of help it did. And they said his name and I can't remember it off the top of my head.
I have no idea, but I'll tell you this. It's a very Michael Dorn energy, a very Worf. I don't know. It's something about the eyes.
It is something about the eyes.
It's very intimidating. Like he will pull your arms out of your sockets. You know it just by looking at him.
Like those guys in the some of the orc, the Lord of the Rings orc makeup and stuff. They've just got these dudes with the intense eyes, all the acting's in the eyes. Yeah. I thought it was cool. And then they go down in the pit and they do the sort of, Danny Trejo who's just sort of like, hey, the Rancors aren't so bad.
Exactly.
Don't prod them. Just feed them. Don't starve them. Be nice to them, and they'll kind of just mosey around.
Yeah,
they basically mosey told them they're pit bulls. Rancors are basically good boys. You just got to be nice to them. They bond to you.
Yeah, he.
It's only when you aggravate them that they're sons of bitches.
Legitimately calls them an emotionally complex creature, which I loved. Right. And then the fact that Boba goes down there, and he's like, "What's wrong with this Rancor?" And Danny Trejo is like, he's depressed. And then Boba goes over and starts petting it. And he's like, I think he likes it. Yeah. And he's just got this
spot. Like, oh, that's the spot just under the eye.
The giant smile on his face the whole time. Like, I have been a Boba Fett fan since, I don't know, 1988 or 89, whenever I realized that Boba Fett was a thing, right?
Right.
And I've never read a Boba Fett story or watched Boba Fett on TV and gone, I relate to him right now. He's just always been a character I liked because he looked cool. Finally, in this episode, I was like, oh, I got something in common with Boba Fett. Because if that was me, I'd be doing the same shit. Can I pet that dog? Can I pet that dog? Absolutely, that's what I would be doing. I loved it so much. And then when he's talking to Danny Trejo and Danny Trejo says, like, well, you know, legend is that the witches of Dathomir rode Rancors. First off, A plus fucking Star Wars EU reference, my dudes.
Yeah.
And then immediately Boba smiles real big and he goes, I want to ride him. I've ridden Beast 10 times this size.
I love that reference.
That was great.
Because doesn't that reference like the Mythosaur?
I thought it was a holiday special.
That's what I was going to say.
Purple dragon he's on.
The Brontosaurus thing in the holiday special.
I kind of wonder if that was a holiday special reference. I'm not sure. Because we don't really know what the whole, as far as I know, we don't really know the connection between Boba and the Mythosaur, right? We don't really know what that's all about, as far as I can remember. At least in current canon. Yeah, that I loved it so much. And you know that's going to pay off. They're not going to have Boba be like, I want to ride him. We're going like to see.
That gate is going to open.
Yeah.
That big Jabba gate. And he's just going to be on that thing. So when all the pikes roll up at the, you know, whoever it is, roll up at the palace to you know, try to take over. And the gate just opens and there's Boba, you know, flanked by his mates on Vespers and his guards. And he's just on top of this Rancor.
Yeah. And Black Chrysanthemum.
Yep, on a little motorbike. Like you get the spare one.
Oh, they're going to have to tape two of those things together for that boy.
He's got like one on each foot.
Like using them like roller skates. I loved it so much. I can't wait to see more of the Rancor. I really think they should have waited until after the Book of Boba Fett to put that damn Rancor up on HasLab.
What an own goal.
Especially if they're going to have my dude riding him, like, how does that not sell? A Rancor with a Boba Fett that you can put riding on its back? I think that gets backed easily. It's just insanity. I mean,
put a saddle on him. You know, get a saddle as an extra, you know, was it stretch goal or whatever they call it?
Yeah. And, you know, they got that fucking Razor Crest thing out and backed before they blew up the Razor Crest last season. So they had the wherewithal. I'm assuming that they knew. I don't know that they did or not. But yeah, I just was so delighted with the Boba and Rancor stuff. And I love that his droid comes in and is like, hey, man. And he's like, not right now. I'm busy. But then, of course, you know, it's the whole thing like, oh, the mayor can't see you for 20 days or whatever. So Boba and his crew roll out to try and fuck with the mayor. What'd you think about that part, Will?
That was epic. I mean, it was just really cool. Again, throwing his weight around as the daimyo is exactly what he's got to do right now. He's got to establish his dominance, his territory, his dominion.
Yep.
And that's totally appropriate.
Yeah.
And I love when he says a little heavy-handed, and she was like, do you want to see him or not?
Yeah.
It's getting no respect.
I don't think it's heavy-handed. I think it's appropriate at the moment.
Like, for as many times as we heard this dude in all the trailers and previews say that he intends to rule with respect, like, ain't nobody giving my dude Boba Fett any respect. He's got to get a little by the end of this series.
I was about to say, he's having to take all the respect, and I totally get it.
And then, so, you know, we get into the chase scene between the biker gang and the mayor. We kind of touched on it earlier. I felt it was a little slow, but that was
really... It was a gratuitous excuse to see the cyborg powers.
That's what I was going to say. One of the coolest things to me was seeing like what those characters' cybernetic or cyborg enhancements actually do.
Right? It was cool.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. Like the one dude has like the spike in his heel.
Piston leg.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Do either of you guys have anything else to add? I know we talked about it a little bit, like the chase itself. Will, in case you didn't see this, I wouldn't have known it unless it was pointed out on social media. That painting of Jabba that they bust through, that's a Ralph McQuarrie concept art piece.
Oh, that's cool.
So just...
It would have been interesting if they'd framed it, you know, if that's a historical painting, but, you know, they've kind of framed it in a different light rather, you know, like Jabba stares down the insignificant Jedi or the, uh-huh. You know what I mean? It's not Luke Skywalker turns up with his mates to kill Jabba the Hutt. I mean, mm-hmm. Maybe it is. Now that Jabba's not around, they can paint that kind of stuff now. They're just like, well, we really couldn't put that out for a while before because Jabba shut that shit down.
It honestly crossed my mind at the time. I was like, I wonder if that's some sort of special picture. You know, like, I wonder if that's...
Like a Star Wars reference.
Yeah, like a Star Wars picture. I'll bet that's an Easter egg or something.
I love, by the way, Boba Fett dropping out of the sky on his jetpack. Like, was it the perfectly done effect and, like, flawless like you would see in a Star Wars movie in the theater? No, but it didn't matter. Him dropping out of the sky suddenly with his jetpack delighted me to no end. Fucking love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, overall, probably...
It was a real Bob Zemeckis Back to the Future homage, wasn't it? I mean, it really had that too. You know, it was the real, either the hoverboard chase or the skateboards in the first one.
The radish.
It was, you know, he could have been spitting out a big pile of shit or something like that. And it was, but it was cool, but it kind of fit that, it fit the vibe of it. It was that sort of... inner town sort of, you know, the pacing was a bit like that, and if you're going for that, then I think it succeeded. But again, compared to the breakneck speed of last week on that train, a little bit different.
I definitely felt the difference between the two. And you know, I do wonder, so like, you guys remember in Solo when Han Solo is about to do a trick and he's like, I learned this trick from my buddy Needles, and that's kind of a Back to the Future reference. And then, like you said, I do feel like this is in some ways a Back to the Future reference, but you know, I believe his name is Dean Cundley.
Okay. I go, whoa.
Hey man.
Hey. Checks all kinds.
Look man,
Australian or no, you're like, hey, I can drop it.
No. Cundley, I believe his name is one of the directors of photography for the Book of Boba Fett, and he worked on Back to the Future. So I wonder, like, I don't know if he worked on this episode specifically. I think he did the last one. But I wonder
we
if
we had the train last week. You know, everybody, it's funny because, you know, everybody was like, oh my God, it was just like the train Back to the Future 3 last week. Wasn't that amazing? And then people were like, oh, it was just like Back to the Future 2 this week. How lame. It's just like, dude, like, you can't just, you know, the homages are the homages.
Yeah.
It's just like, get your hankers up one way or the other.
And so the mayor's guy basically tells him, like, it's the Pikes. He's been working with the Pikes. And then sort of the episode ends, we see the Star Cruiser come in, a bunch of Pikes get off. One of Boba's buddies is there checking them out. There's a funny eye line where he's like, keep an eye on them. It's just an expression. You know what I mean? And then you get like sort of the stinger at the end is basically them deciding that they're going to go to war with the Pikes, which I think is a hell of a setup for sort of the back half of this season. What did... Josh, we'll go with you first on this one. What did you think about that?
Can I drop a theory?
Absolutely.
I've got another theory.
I love this theories.
This is the place for that.
This is the place. I have a feeling, and I know this is probably going to be unsubstantiated, and we're probably never going to know. I have a feeling that Tuskens are fish people. Maybe even Pikes. Because they keep talking about Tatooine used to be an ocean. And then basically the ocean dries up. And these fish people are like covered from head to toe. They've got the apparatuses around their mouths. They're not dissimilar from the Pikes' helmets and the things that they've got around their stuff as well. Maybe the Pikes are here to claim what's theirs. Maybe these are the Pikes that were like, you know, as the planet died, half of them were like, well, we're out of here. We're going to go find somewhere else. And some of them were like, no, we're going to stay behind and we're going to, you know, stay with our planet as it dies. And now they've just come back like, you know what? We own this planet. This is ours. You know, these Tuscan, you know, these other people, this is like the feral versions of us, or the, you know, the idiots who stayed. And we're basically going to come back and we're going to run this thing. I mean, it probably will never be proven, but I've never heard that theory before. And I thought it was
Never heard that. And the fact that, like, I'm kind of fascinated what a Tusken Raider looks like under all that gear. And if they did turn out to be like a fish person, they have, like, last week I thought it was so cool when there was that one line, you know, that the Tusken chieftain says about, you know, living in the sand since the ocean's dried. And then
twice, it drops again this episode. Yeah.
Twice this episode, they bring that up again. So, yeah, I think it's, they do keep mentioning that, weirdly enough. Man, what a reveal. That'll make me dislike the Pikes even more. Like, if they're like, hey, guys, see you later. We're going to go somewhere else until we feel like, hey, we want to go back. Oh, my goodness. What did you think, Will? What did you think about the end? You got any theories for going forward?
I don't have any right off the top of my head. My mind is just blown by the one that Josh shared with us. That's pretty deep. That's a
copyright
deep
this podcast. If it happens, keep that clip. You know, like, you know, who knows?
Man,
I think the Pikes are a potent enemy. Don't they control the spice trade from Kessel?
Seems like it.
Pikes are maybe one of the wealthiest, you know, criminal organizations in the galaxy. So that's a pretty potent enemy.
Yeah.
It's my assumption.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it could get pretty brutal before it gets better. And I do, like, Josh, you were mentioning the whole Crimson Dawn thing. Like, I know that's been sort of floating around since before this show ever came out, you know? And I don't know, man. Like, I do feel like there are some surprises left. Like, I think...
Is there any mention of Tatooine at all post this show in any of the, you know, like the sequel trilogy books or anything like that? Like, because it's sort of weird that, you know, like we went to Force Awakens and we kept going to these desert places that basically weren't Tatooine. Like, Tatooine's right. Kind of was avoided. Oh, no, hang on. No, Rey goes back, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, so okay, Tatooine's still there. I'm like, maybe they put the ocean back on there. I'm like, no, that doesn't work. Rey went there. Okay, let's stick a fork in that one. That's a wackadoo theory. One step too far.
Yeah, I do think there are some surprise, and that would be a pretty big surprise. I think Kira showing up.
Kira, that would be,
or Crimson Dawn, in general. And the thing, you know, they had. Just before this show starts, they have that whole War of the Bounty Hunters comics event, and Crimson Dawn and Kira are such a big part of that. And, you know, I've seen people sort of say, well, you know, the fact that they used her so heavily in the comic kind of makes me think that maybe they don't have any sort of live action plans for her currently because, you know,
They're messing with it.
Otherwise, maybe that character would be off the table to use, right? But then again, right. It's also set several years before Book of Boba Fett. So, you know, you could still do that. I don't know. I think there are surprises left. I think.
I think so, too.
That, you know, there's going to be some more oh shit and holy shit moments coming down the line. I don't know.
Do you think it's a one and done series?
I hope not. You know, I do think sort of it will culminate storyline-wise with Boba going to help Din with something. And we won't see it. Like, he'll get the call to action from Din, or, you know, Din will come be like, hey, I need help with this thing. And then, because, you know, kind of like the Book of Boba Fett teaser led into... or ended Mandalorian season 2 and led into the Book of Boba Fett. I could see there being some sort of stinger or teaser in this series that leads into Mandalorian season 3 and sort of sets the table for that. So I do kind of feel like Boba Fett will be part of Mandalorian season 3. So hopefully he makes it through that and then they could do a second season. Cause I would love
that. Yeah. I think by the end of this series, he's achieved whatever he sets out to achieve, and he walks away. Basically, he's just like, "Well, I wanted to be top dog in order to, whether it's avenge the Tuskens now or get rid of the Pikes, whatever it is, you feel like he needs to do." I think by the end of this, he's just like, "Job done, Fennec. You know, you're much more qualified and know more about this. You run things. I'm gonna, you know, go walk the earth or something like that, or whatever it's going to be, you know, whether it's, I'm going to go help, you know, the Mandalorian or do something else." Like, I feel like another season of him sort of learning the ropes and being a crime boss, I don't know whether there's enough juice in it. I think as a compacted story, I think it's great, but I think by the end, I think he'll be like, job done. I've achieved the thing I wanted to achieve, or I've honored the Tuskens or whatever I need to do. And then I'm off into the sunset. For more adventures.
I did kind
to of deal with some Mandalorian specifically focused stuff, maybe, is my guess.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I do think that all the Django related flashback or dream sequences or whatever are gonna lead to him sort of wanting to explore the whole Mandalorian side of himself a little more, you know? And I think that'll sort of be his entryway into Mandalorian season 3, or this, you know, this big connected story they're going forward. I think your call about Fennec being left in charge of Tatooine is probably, I think that's probably spot on. The only bummer that presents is that potentially means less Fennec going forward. And I would hate to see that, but I do kind of think you're probably right about that.
It'd be cool for him to use it as a home base.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah, check in. Keep an eye on things. But, you know, I think it would just be weird if he was in Mando season 3 and he's supposedly the crime lord of Tatooine, you know, established now because he's won the day. And then he's just sort of going, I'm taking off to help my mates. It just seems a little bit weird.
Yeah. I totally get it. Well, hey, do you guys want to do some voicemails and hear from some of our friends, see what they think about this?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Let me get that going.
Kia D. Kia D. Kia D. Cockhead. The only Jedi master who can crash box. Kia D. Cockhead. Running around slaying bitches with his cockhead. He's a big Saurian stud. He loves to split chicks with his bud. Kia D. Cockhead. To stroke his cone and suck on his balls. Kia D. Cockhead. What you gonna do when he comes on you now? He's a Jedi Council stooge, but he'll be pumping spooge tomorrow. Cockhead. Blue Herb. Cockhead. Harsberger. Cockhead. Will Witten. Cockhead. Goose Payne. Cockhead. G-Money. Cockhead. King Tom. Cockhead. Joe. Cockhead. Kia D. Cockhead. Cockhead.
Hey, if you guys want to send in a voicemail or an email, it's easy enough. Just send it to blueharvestpodcast@gmail.com. First up, you know who it is. It's our buddy Tom Chansky, the king of all Toms.
Hey there, Hawes and Will and Josh. It is with great regret and sorrow that I send this voicemail. I'm afraid the title that you've been kind enough to bestow upon me, Nostradamus, I don't think I can be referred to that anymore. I feel like a fraud. I had this big prediction last week that the Tusken Raiders would play up into the end game of the Book of Boba Fett, and that is obviously not happening. Nostradamus just kind of feels fraudulent now. And honestly, all that aside, I am disappointed that they chose to kill off the whole tribe, or seemingly the whole tribe. I thought they could have done something better. Even though I'm retiring the title of Nostradamus, abdicating from it, that does not mean my days of prognostication are over. In fact, I have a prediction for you. I know you and I have talked about this, the concept that Tatooine was once a lush ocean planet, and it feels like this is something they've mentioned every episode so far, that Tatooine was once a lush ocean planet, and then there was a cataclysm that turned the seas into sand. And this, you know, this was mentioned in Legends at least once in the Darth Plagueis novel. My idea, it's a bit more of a long-term prediction, but what if at some point we get some movies, you know, future movies set in the way, way past, maybe the Rian Johnson trilogy or some other, you know, Taika Waititi or something, you know, taking place in a galaxy where things are a lot different. And, you know, the heroes are based on a water, ocean, or, you know, very healthy planet. But to defeat the villains, they have to sacrifice their planet. The planet ends up being Tatooine and the heroes become the Tusken Raiders. Just an idea. Even though I can't be Nostradamus anymore, I just can't. I can't stop. Anyway, let me know what you think. Thanks for the great podcast, or great podcasts, I should say, because the master of the beanies is there. Thank you for the great podcasts, and I will talk with you later.
I was so sure he was going to say fish people.
Oh my god,
Nostradamus! Oh my god, no, Nostradamus, you're back, dude. You were that close. I mean, I know you're still a king, but I was like, holy shit, he's just completely abdicated himself, and then he was that close.
I was.
Oh my god, Tom,
sitting on the edge of my seat, waiting for him to be like, and they're fish people.
That was like that Beatles documentary when you're trying to get them to write the song. You're like, you're so close. You've almost written. Get like, you've just got to fix that word. And you've nearly written it. Oh my god, Tom.
Look, I would not be surprised if, you know, at some point when we do get, you know, Star Wars in the way, way past, that we do see a way different version of Tatooine than when we're used to, especially now that they've established that however long ago it was, you know, quite different there.
I love these Tusken Raider origin stories that people are creating and thinking about because of these lines.
Yep.
I absolutely love this.
Me too.
And I don't know that Tom is entirely incorrect. It's pretty obvious that his revenge for the Tusken Raiders may play a major part in his psyche even to the end of things, you know.
Oh yeah. And you know what? Maybe I don't know if Tom remembers this or not. But back in the prequel days, like on message boards and stuff, a popular I don't know how popular, but a theory I remember reading was that Naboo was going to end up being Dagobah, and that something was going to happen to Naboo and turn it into Dagobah. So just from that point alone, I dig Tom's theory because it reminds me of fucking batshit theories that used to go on in the prequel era.
Force.net or one of those.
Yeah.
Or Jedi.net or one of those. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Back in the day.
What
did Super Shadow think about that? Remember him?
Oh, do I? I remember Super Shadow talking about how there was a sequel trilogy script and the Mandalorians were the bad guys and all kinds of crazy shit.
Oh, yeah. He's out there somewhere.
So next up, we've got a voicemail from our buddy Matthew Thurbin. It's Turbo.
Hey there, Hoss and Will, and maybe Josh, if I've sent this voicemail in time. I've got a few thoughts and questions on the latest Boba episode. Actually, chapter 2 and 3, probably. I'm going to keep it positive here because Twitter is already doing a great job of harshing my vibe. So, look, I bloody love chapter 3, even after the dizzying highs of chapter 2, which was near perfect Star Wars for me. So last week's Blue Harvest, there was a lot of talk about the lizard wizard. And man, I can't stop thinking about this little guy. I don't know if that that Chief Tusken or that shaman has a name, but from now on, I'm going to call him King Gizzard. That has a nice ring to it, don't you think? So now, ever since the episode with the lizard wizard up the nose and Boba tripping balls, I can't stop seeing lizards around my house. You may have seen my posts, but there's a 2-foot water dragon lizard hanging out near my pool most mornings, and there's also a blue tongue lizard that welcomes me every morning on the front deck or the porch, as you guys would call it, out when I check the mail. And there's little skinks in the bathroom all the time, freaking out my wife and kids. Maybe it's just that my focus is determining my reality, but it feels like I'm surrounded by lizards, man. I don't know. Maybe this is the universe telling me I should take one in as a pet. So, chapter three. So when we see the Boba flashback to the Tuskens being slaughtered, man, I love how this show has made me show empathy towards these Tuskens. It's something that I never thought would happen. Empathy seems to be one of the themes of the show, I guess. I was devastated by the Tusken slaughter. I didn't see it coming. And the first thing I thought was, where's my little lizard mate? That little basket of his. Did he survive? Is he safe? Then my thoughts were for the Tusken warrior and the Tusken kid. I mean, surely they survived. They didn't show any shots of them. I can imagine the Tusken warrior later in episodes doing a run-in to save Boba and joining his tribe or his found family in Jabba's palace or Boba's palace. How cool would it be to see Boba take on the Tusken kid as his own child or sidekick? Or even, I was thinking, at the very least, it would look like that, seem like that feral kid in Mad Max. I don't know. But most of all, what I want to see is the lizard wizard return and sit on the shoulder of Boba Fett riding a bantha, or even better, riding that rancor. I'd lose my shit. What do you guys think? Anyway, take care, my friends. May the force be with you. I'm going to go for a swim now because you know I keep it clean. maybe my little water dragon buddy will join me. Take care, guys.
Man. I had a lizard in my pool yesterday.
Oh, really? Did you take it to the nose?
No, but it did fall in the water because he's chilling on the side because it's hot on the bricks. But then he fell in the water when my daughter jumped in. I had to save him and put him back on the bricks and stuff. So
that's a good man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I wish I had that much lizard activity. I fucking love lizards. And the most lizard activity we ever get is like, you know, we'll move our doormat or something around our door and we'll see like a little blue-tailed salamander. That's about the only lizard activity we get. I wish there were huge fucking dinosaur lizards outside my house. I'm so jealous. You guys get all the cool shit, man. I get like...
It's a big problem in Florida. They got big old iguanas and stuff. They try to encourage you to kill them and eat them.
Wait, what?
Yeah, in Florida, like iguanas are a big deal, like a big problem, pest nuisance.
Like a cane toad. What's that big? What's the big one? The Komodo dragon?
The Komodo dragon.
Yeah.
Komodo dragon. Yeah. I mess with them.
Man, it's probably a good thing that I don't have giant iguanas outside my house because I'd probably lose a finger or something trying to make friends with them. So now that I think about it, maybe it's for the best.
Yeah, like you could feed the wild iguanas off to your back porch.
And I would.
You would. you'd be the iguana king.
I don't know about the Tusken warrior and the kid. Like, to me, they kind of implied the kid was dead when they showed his stick. Like when they showed Boba burning the stick. I hope I'm wrong. I would like nothing more to be wrong.
I didn't think about
that. He was sad because he's like,
that's the kid's stick.
Yeah, I took a few beatings to that stick and I'm still going to miss him.
Yep. And like, I think, you know, that's probably the best way to approach it, especially if you're like Disney. They probably don't want to show a dead kid in the Star Wars show, you know? Like George Lucas would have straight up had that kid. You know, he did not mind having some dead kids on the ground in Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, yeah.
But I could be very well, I could be wrong. They definitely didn't show the Tusken warrior lady. For sure they didn't. They showed the chief. So, I don't know.
There was, just thinking back, I'd have to pause it, but there wasn't any, like, bodies of anybody else. You would have thought that they got a few shots in. You know, if it'd been the biker gang, you'd think there'd be a few blown up bikes and a few dead bikers there as well. They wouldn't have just been able to go in and take them all out pretty easily, which makes me feel like if it was the pikes, you know, aerial assault or, you know, surrounded them or something.
I think they were trying to draw the veil for like family friendliness.
You know,
like not a bunch of bodies laying around, like, you know, all the bodies in a funeral pyre, you know, lighting that on fire is about as much as you want to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to guess.
Is it 300? The movie 300 where they roll up to the the soldiers roll up and they turn up to that village that the Persians have gone through, and like all the people are like stapled to that tree or whatever. Like they're not going to do that in they could do that in Star Wars.
But once again, do you know how stoked I would be if the Tusken kid and the Tusken warrior showed up down the road?
It as, would be like, cool. The big,
run in,
they made it through that massacre. Yeah.
Oh, that would be cool.
It would be.
That would be very cool. I kind of wonder if Boba will reach out to any of the other Tusken tribes at some point. I'm not sure. Like, I don't know.
Does he have to start all over again then?
Yeah, right.
When he was working with Din Djarin with the sandworm, right? Like,
no, that was Cobb Vanth.
That's Cobb Vanth.
Yeah, Din Djarin and Cobb Vanth went to see the Tuskens. Don't let that handsome bastard with his good hair fool you, Will. That ain't the real Boba Fett.
That ain't the real Boba. Nuh-uh. Sorry.
No. Cool as he turned out to be.
We've still got that big gap of, you know, what happens between, you know, essentially he's walked away from the camp now, and there's 5 years of before he turns up at the end of The Mandalorian now and spies his armor. So what, you know, there is a, you kind of go, oh, the flashback stuff's kind of resolved itself. Now he's got his motivation. But there is a big sort of chunk in the middle here of like, what's he up to? Is he just walking the desert for 5 years, or is he doing other stuff now? Does he take the message out to the camps, like you said, and say, hey, come on?
Yeah, I do think, I mean, I don't think we're done with flashbacks. For one, there was in one of the trailers, there's a shot of him in his black robe get up on sort of like a mountain overlooking Jabba's palace. And I think that's probably him going to get his ship back. Like I said, I do think we'll find him. We'll see him finding Fennec and getting her all fixed up, you know. So I think there is some more flashback stuff to cover. But I also feel like with sort of the declaration of war at the end of this episode, we're kind of maybe going to finally sort of transitioned into mainly present day story stuff, if I had to guess.
Yep.
All right, let's did we miss anything of Turbo's? Oh, him, he better go back and find that little lizard. Like, I hope the next flashback is him on the Bantha and he's like riding and they drop the first full S word in Star Wars and he goes, oh shit. And he turns the Bantha around and he goes and finds his little lizard buddy. Perfect. Let's hope that happens.
Boba Fett finds the lizard and he takes it in the Rancor to the fight for the throne of Mandalore, and he lets the lizard run up the nose of the Rancor and he goes absolutely ape shit berserker.
It just wrecks house. One of Turbo's big lizards for that one.
Yeah, you might need a couple. Maybe that lizard was small, adolescent, and he'll get bigger. But yeah, you're going to need like a chilling by Turbo's pool lizard to go up that Rancor snout.
Shove a Komodo dragon up there.
Man, the mental image of Boba and Din and a whole bunch of other Mandalorians riding into war and Boba's on the back of a Rancor.
Oh, dude.
Fuck me. Oh, my God. I can't wait. I hope you're right, Will. Let's hear from our buddy Jim.
Good evening, Hawes and Will and Mr. Chapman. I hope you're all having a great night. How about that newest episode? Man, I think they are killing it with the show. But I had a theory. I was wondering, what do you guys think if the Pikes actually staged that attack on the Sand People? And that this way they're going to get Boba to attack the biker gang. And that way it's sort of, you know, got their enemies fighting their enemies. It's just a theory, or maybe that's everybody's theory and it's more transparent than I know. But what do you guys think about that? And also, if you guys got to name the Rancor, what would you name it?
Oh,
all right, gentlemen, ignite the green.
Ooh. Well, Jim, you probably spent the last, you know, hour and change being like, well, I guess they talked about that. Now it's time for Jim to call out the subject of the podcast before we get to it. He sapped a little of King Tom's powers from him. Josh, what would you name that Rancor?
Crunchy.
Crunchy.
for some reason, I even thought of that when I was, when he goes, like, we've got to give you a name in my head. For some reason, Crunchy popped in my head. And I've been thinking about it for the last day, really, for some reason. I don't know why. I just thought it was a nice name.
Crunchy the Rancor. I could do it. What about you, Will? What you got for the name in the Rancor?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like Bobo would call it something pet, like Nipper or something. I don't know.
I'm trying to think. What would be a good... Probably name him like...
Tiny.
Tiny. Probably name him like Hurley. Hurley.
Chumbo.
Chumbo.
Chumbo. Chumbo is good.
Chumbo, like Chumbo is pretty good. It's my Rancor Chumbo.
Come on, like Chumbo. Chumbo. got work to do, Chumbo. Let's ride.
Oh, man. I don't know what I would name him. This is agonizing for me because every time Jesse and I have gotten a pet, you want to talk about a debate on what to name that animal.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
It's the same as kids. I nearly got Linus across the line at our house, but it didn't happen.
Oh, Linus is a good name.
Yeah, we didn't have any boys, though.
Yeah.
And see, I think years later, I think Kat just said, well, I'm glad a few relatives caught wind of it and were like, we're glad you didn't end up doing that. I'm like, Linus is great. Anyway.
All right. We got one more voicemail and an email, and then we'll call it a night. This one comes from our buddy, Utah Dougie.
Awesome, Will. This is Dougie. Just a quick take after watching Boba Fett episode 3. That dark Wookiee is amazing. I quoted a picture of him with his knuckle spikes a couple days ago before the episode came out. This is the first time I've ever been right about something. Do you see those electric knuckle spikes he's got going on? That was awesome. And may I just say that Book of Boba Fett has not been very kind to Banthas this season. There has been an over amount of Bantha death, and every time I see it, it breaks my heart. Anyway, guys, love you. Keep it clean. Ignite the green. Dougie.
Noah,
can't sling a dead cat around here without hitting a dead Bantha.
Man, something happened with Dougie's voicemail there. It sounded like he was getting intercepted. Or like he just piloted the Millennium Falcon into an asteroid belt.
I think it's just cheap to throw the carcass around.
Yeah, they probably
made one scale model and chuck in front of the volume.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, let's bring out the dead Bantha. Let's put it in front of here for effect. But he is right. There's been a lot of Banthas getting killed. And in
the moral equation of television, it's not a human being shot and killed. It's an animal.
Yeah, it still bums me out, though.
I mean, I know. I'm just telling you the logical way, you know, they justify the violence and death for an animal versus a human. Trying to keep it family friendly.
At least they're not having him sort of walking away from that with a big roasted Fred Flintstone-sized Bantha spare rib or something. You know, Boba Fett's like, well, don't want it to go to waste. You know, it's sort of... I imagine that'd be good eating.
There's a lot of meat on these Banthas, you guys.
You send the droid out to do that.
Get the best cut.
I will say this. When we see Boba in Mandalorian Season 2, you know what he does not have? He does not have a Bantha. So I don't know... that things go great for that Bantha that he leaves on.
Know what? Maybe Banthas are just bullet sponges. You know, you're big, you're furry, you're in the desert. Probably got lots of dingle berries. You know, maybe you're the natural bullet sponge of the desert.
Maybe. All right, so we got one email, then we'll call it a night. This one comes from our buddy Kevin. He said, hey, Blue Harvesters, here's some thoughts that have been percolating in my mind over the last few weeks. Omega and Boba. My understanding from the Bad Batch was that Boba and Omega are essentially siblings genetically. Omega seemed fairly universally loved, had a kind spirit, was caring and supportive of other characters. I've been wondering if she's been deliberately made this way in the story to demonstrate that the Fetts are good folk at heart rather than the cold bounty hunter image we've had for a few decades. That this now gives a bit of nuance to the Fett family, which I think we're starting to see in the Book of Boba Fett series. Stormy and the Sarlacc with Boba. If the stormtroopers are still clones by this stage in the story, Perhaps this is to show that genetically modified clones were inferior, so couldn't find a way out. While the unaltered Boba was superior and could utilize what he had access to in order to escape. I was also really pleased how little time the Sarlacc escape got. Clearly he escaped, it doesn't really matter how, and getting that part of the story out of the way, which freed up time to focus on the new story, which doesn't have any impact on the old Boba we loved from Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. I also really hope the recent characters like Mando and the new aspects of Boba help some people to better appreciate the damaged Luke of the sequel trilogy. One thing I have enjoyed about the Disney era is that while not everybody loves it, some of the classic characters are being made a little more complex than just a colored lightsaber or jetpack. It's been good finding out a little more of what's under the surface of these characters. Thought it was interesting, too, that the start of Book of Boba Fett Chapter 1 assumed everyone had seen the post-credit scene from the end of Mando Season 2. A criticism I've heard of the prequels is that it assumes the audience already knows all about the Force and other key elements of the story. I hope that Book of Boba Fett doesn't go a similar way. Final thought, I reckon there's two versions of the Rancor Pit scene from Chapter 2. Had the Rancor been funded, there'd been a beast of some sort in there. No Black Series Rancor funding, then nothing for the fans in the show either. Cheers, gents. Sorry for the long message, but good to clear my head of a few thoughts. Love the podcast. Listening to you two is a highlight of my Saturdays down here in Australia, Kev. So, look, I don't know that Hasbro was that clued in about Book of Boba Fett. And if the production is that clued in, but if it was, obviously it's not now. I mean, we know this now that we've seen the third episode. Now Boba has his very own Rancor. But if they were that fucking petty to be like, oh, y'all, you guys didn't fund our $400 toy. We're taking something away from you guys in this show that's coming up. That shit would be hilarious. I just think the stormtrooper there was there to add a little spice. You know what I mean? A little horror element to the Sarlacc scene. Because I'm pretty sure.
It was an element to aid him in his escape.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And also,
it was his tool, his hand. What is it? Survivor Man. You know, he always brings the one random thing. His one random thing in the Sarlacc was a stormtrooper.
Was a dead stormtrooper.
You never know what you'll have out there.
And I'm pretty sure by now there aren't any clone stormtroopers anymore. I think they're all sort of conscripted.
They've aged out, haven't they? Yeah. They all age faster too, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they'd all be, I mean, how old's Boba Fett supposed to be in this? Mid-40s?
I don't really know. I'm kind of bad at following that sort of stuff.
Well, they make it hazy on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the Fetts are bad people at all. Like, Jango's actually, you know, he's a man who wants to get the job done, but he's very warm around his son, and you know, even cordial with Obi-Wan when he speaks to him. Like, I think they've got a bit of a bad rap, thinking that they're sort of ice cold psychopaths or anything like that. I think they're just about all about the job.
Yeah,
I mean, he may have dishonored his clan by allowing the Kaminoans to copy him, but that doesn't make him a bad guy. You know, makes him trying to provide.
He's just a simple man trying to find his way on through the galaxy. You got sweet ocean view apartment on Kamino. You know what I mean? You get a kid.
Without a wife.
Get a kid.
Just cut out the hassle.
I don't. Yeah, I've never been a fan of just like sort of the one-dimensional idea of what Boba Fett is. So them adding layers to him and
him
humor
being conflicted about what he is and where he's come from, that's to see, you know, because that's true character progression. Also, the Omega thing, I would YOLO'd everything into Omega shows up and she has something to do with helping cure whatever his chronic illness is.
You think that's your big theory?
That's me, yeah.
Uh-oh. Here we go. Omega. Who knows, man?
Hello, brother.
I think that'd be
a good drop. There was a lady who is in some of Taika Waititi's movies, who's hilarious. I thought she'd play an older Omega. She's in Thor Ragnarok. She's like the you know, Jeff Goldblum's like the guy who runs the city, and he's got like the lady who kind of like the, who's like her, he's her he's marshal, like head of the police thing.
Yes,
she's a New Zealand actor, and she's hilarious. She's in a bunch of like Hunt for the Wilder People, a bunch of Taika Waititi stuff. She'd be, you know, age appropriate for that kind of thing, and she's great. I'm like, get her as an older Omega, do it.
What if they pull out all the stops and you have a Tamora Morrison, old Bad Batch, like playing
God.
All of the Bad Batch?
Oh my goodness, man. Oh, the whole Bad Batch shows
up. The wig
up
and bandana.
So it almost becomes like Norbit or like the Nutty Professor or something.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Oh, my goodness. Look, in my head, it sounds a little silly and a little wacky, but this show's been a little silly and a little wacky in a good way,
right,
I feel.
Right.
So fucking bring it on, man. Let's get you want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Get nuts.
Well, hey, man, I think
Tamora Morrison said, I need a new house.
He's like, you know what? I want my own Polynesian spa. Thank you very much. So, guys, I think that does it for us this week. Josh, buddy, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. It's great just to chat to you guys again. And
absolutely.
You know, Celebration, as it stands today, will be coming. I'll be coming to Celebration, which is only 4 months away or something, you know, as the world stands today, which, it, you know, 6 months ago, it looked like it wasn't going to happen. So, well, fingers crossed, we'll be hanging out for real life, you know, before you know it.
That would be awesome, buddy. Are you you cooking up any special merch? You don't have to tell me what it is. I don't know.
I don't know, because, like, a lot of people have asked for the hats again, especially people who missed out last time, but it's going to be in California in May. It's going to be so hot. So I'll probably just do a run, because I can do a limited run. Mm-hmm. I can actually do 20 if I need to, but I'll probably do, you know, for whoever wants one can get one, and I'll probably just charge cost, which would be like $15 or $20 something, and do a run on those. And then we'll see. We'll just see how we go. I've just got to get there first.
Because man, those hats were a hit.
I know.
At Celebration last time, I don't know how many times Jesse and I got asked, I keep seeing these hats everywhere. Where are you guys getting those?
I had people going, we queued up at the store for 2 hours to get them and got told that they weren't there. They didn't exist. So, yeah. Hopefully I can do that again. So we'll see. But, no, it's been awesome coming on. So, yeah, I'll just plug in away the podcast. Yeah. I will spell it out. Still going. I was on Steel's show about a week or two ago, which was awesome. I got to get up on the stage like a big boy rather than being in the audience, which was pretty cool. I've never done that before at a Steel Wars show. And the Peppa Pig podcast with Matt still going on. I have to ask you, have you got season 3 of Bluey yet in Australia? In America, sorry.
I don't think we have.
Oh, mate, you're in for a treat. Hopefully you'll get it soon. So good. Bluey Harvest. We could do a spin-off show.
Bluey Harvest. What a name.
I could talk all day about Bluey. I tell anybody that will listen to my, you know, spiel in my life, Bingo Healer is the single most pure soul in the world. And if everything ever happened to her, I would kill everyone in the room with me just out of sheer sadness.
Wow.
There you go. I know you don't have kids, Hawes, but do yourself a favor. Sit back, relax, you know, have a hit of something that you like and put sleepy time on and thank us in the morning.
Done. I'll do that for you guys specifically.
You'll get your tear ducts working.
Hey, guys, if you want to support this show, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Harvest Podcast. I've been posting immediate reactions to the Book of Boba Fett. We have a brand new episode of Hall's Calls with me and Steel. And lots more coming. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes if you haven't already. Check out Stoned Cobra. They were kind enough to provide the music for our theme song. You can find them on iTunes, Spotify, and at stonedcobra.bandcamp.com. And we'll see you next week when our special guest will be our buddy Sal Perales from the Rogue Rebels podcast. Until then, this has been Blue Harvest. I'm Hals Burkhart.
And I'm Will Whitten.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with all of you.
May the Force be with us.